I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hello, leavers and believers. Welcome to Leaving Hillsong. First timers and all the regulars, thank you so much for joining us today. My name's Tanya, and this is part two of The Closer I Get to God with Devan and Hubert, who we left at the end of part one. He was pretty down and out and downtrodden and been chucked out of church and found his way down to the dens of iniquity, as we discussed. So he found his way out. And Draps and I, who had been running Pride Month last year, continue on with kind of talking about all different ways of recovering from some of those kinds of experiences and where Dee has ended up with them, what he thinks God is all about. And being gay too, and how those things coexist for him. Again, there is a language warning. He kind of, you know what I mean, he settles in here and he gets a little bit more relaxed, shall we say. So cover the kids' ears or whatever you want to do. I'll put out a censored version of this very soon. But this is such a broad and rich conversation from three different time zones. We had Draps in the UK and Dee is in Louisiana. I'm in Sydney. We managed to make it happen, so I hope you enjoy the questions and the more questions and the variety of answers that came out of this. Grab your snacks, kick back, and enjoy The Closer I Get to God, part two, with Dee Vannen-Hubert.
The business of trying to fill that void in very negative ways, I didn't realize that a void hated. And so I should have gone and gotten me some psychological therapy and just found a gay affirming church. I didn't know gay affirming churches existed. So I went to the one place that I knew I wouldn't be judged, which was the gay club. So I just hung out more in the streets because I was like, I know if I go to this gay bar, they're not going to kick me out.
Yeah.
So, but they will at church. So I'm going to go where I know I'm not going to be rejected. And the church is a place of rejection. And I was angry and I was bitter. And it was just weird because I had been in church all my life. I had to be 20, 25, 26 when this happened. And suddenly I have all this free time on my hands. I didn't know what Sunday Funday was because I was in church every Sunday. Yeah. And so now I'm like, the gay bars are open on Sunday. And I'm sounding so damn naive. I'm like, why are y'all open on Sundays? I had no idea it was like a whole thing.
And so, wow. I mean, it's so ironic, isn't it, that like you're not supposed to go to these terrible places, but they're the places of acceptance when home doesn't accept you. I mean, where are you going to go?
Oh my God. When I was homeless it was easier for me to go and find the food at a like a drug trap house than it would have been for me to go to a church, because you don't have paperwork and all of this red tape to go through, and it's not who you know, and all of this. If I needed food from Lakewood, I wouldn't know who to ask there. You know, it's just not that sort of, churches just don't do practical shit like that a lot of times. As I say, the further I get away from church, the closer I get to God.
Wow.
This is, I mean, and that's one of the obviously there's bad things and good things, but one of the really good things about the gay community is that there are opportunities to, you know, to open homes up to each other and things like that. Like in some of your stories, obviously it has bad effects as well, but, you know, we long to have a LGBT community that can be a healthy place for everyone to come and, you know, spend time together. And
I mean, when I ran away, that's where I ran to. And that's who kind of accepted me at face value and didn't have like a list of, are you permitted entry based on these answers. It was just like, yeah, I mean, it's not just for LGBT. It's incredible. I got incredible acceptance when I ran out into the big bad world, and I will never forget it. It's beautiful. So, all right. So then you're in the dens of iniquity, and then... then what happened?
Well, I started experimenting with drugs because of getting kicked out of Lakewood. So I mean, it's my choice what I did, but I know looking back that I accepted that ecstasy pill from that guy as an act of rebellion, because I had been being off the drugs all my life. I was damn near 30 years old before I took my first drug. I mean, if I was going to be into them, I would have been into them by then. But when you are hurt, and I carried that anger for years, and I didn't. It's only like maybe last year, really, I started to get over it. Now, this happened when I was like 25, 26. And like I said, I'm about to be 40. So it's taken me the better part of 15 years to really come to terms and peace with what happened at Lakewood. And that's why I tell people, don't get bitter. That shit is not going to help you, because I've done it. And so I took that drug from him, and it just went from there. It made me feel good, and I didn't know that it was causing me to forget that pain that happened, you know, there. And then so I started doing ecstasy like every night because it felt good, and I didn't want to let that good feeling go. So from the outside looking in, people may judge a drug user being like, well, they just want to get high all the time. Well, sometimes we're trying to escape worse pain.
And I wonder as well, like, how conditioned Christians are, especially when they're raised in it, to like go for big highs and then have big come downs. And it's kind of part of the church, like physical experience in Pentecostal churches. It's not too far away.
Oh, churches are very addictive. Very addictive. You know, there's no excuse for somebody like me having to been at church four or five damn nights a week. You know, there's such a thing as being overchurched.
Yeah.
You don't need damn church.
But you're seeking that euphoria again. You're seeking that, you know, the connection, and, you know, there's a lot of connection amongst drug takers as well. And again, you know, how realistic those bonds are, I don't, you know, we don't know, but
it's no different in the church, though. So, yeah, so out on the streets in the homeless world and the drug dealing world, there is community and there is family. Some of it's trustworthy, some of it's fake as hell, but there's no damn difference. Because for all those years that I spent volunteering at Lakewood, when they dismissed me, not one motherfucker called me to see what happened, what was going on. Hell, even on the streets, when you're homeless, if you don't show up for a few days, they come looking to be sure you're okay with the church people.
Yeah, no, it's something we've, you know, talked about a bit. Is the more people are in poverty, the more they'll share. And, you know, we wonder if the churches prey on that giving spirit as well when they open up in kind of lower socioeconomic places.
Yeah, so being the businessman that I am, you know, I started selling the drugs and stuff like that, and it gave me a sense of control and power, which I had lost, and I didn't realize I needed that. It's just, you know, it's crazy. We're, you know, we do stuff like that and we don't really know why we're doing what and why we're doing. And so that's why I'm a big fan of that now. And so, well, I do it. You know, I was a very flashy drug dealer. So I ended up getting like raided by like the SWAT team with like their canine dogs and the helicopters and everything.
Okay. It seems like a natural regression to me, because like preachers and drug dealers, very charismatic people that are selling, you know, something that you can't really have anything to show for. So why not?
Right.
You would have been good at it, I imagine. I mean, we taught terrific customer service, and you know.
Yep, my customer service skills. Now, during this time, I wasn't spiritual at all. You know, I just was angry the whole damn time. You know, I was doing all that, but I wasn't happy. I got HIV, and then that, you know, and went into like this whole nervous breakdown thing because the doctor who told me left a voicemail with my positive HIV results on like New Year's Eve. Like the bastard, he didn't even wait till like the 2nd of January and bring me into the hall with me on December 31st and left the voicemail saying you're HIV positive. Goodbye. So,
Wow. I mean,
that's wild.
Wow. Nothing's changed. Okay. Happy New Year. All right. When was that? I'm sorry to hear.
I think that was 2011. And I was already reeling from everything that happened at Lakewood. And so I just like lost my shit. And then I started getting arrested and everything like that. And so now I have like 4 felonies. I'm banned from Bank of America for life for trying to cash a check there when I was homeless and stuff.
But, you know, look at where you are now. You know, you're helping other people, and you've done all this training on yourself, and, you know, you've learned things, and, you know, it's incredible, really.
It's just funny. Sorry, you know, half of Australia has been to court. It's so, I'm just like, yeah, I mean, do you know what I mean? We're a giant prison here, so not a lot of judgment coming from down under, I'll put it to you that way. We're just so, like, terrified of American prisons because, you know, you steal a grape and it's 3 strikes and that's life. So we're just like, you got out? All right, so how did that cycle end then, and you wind up walking into a church and...
Churches. I don't go to churches anymore. I tried to, and it just never felt right. And the only reason I did go was because of my pastor, Evangelist Nelson, who was my spiritual leader and counselor in life and a very high clairvoyant woman. You know, I was her altar boy. It was a Pentecostal church, but still I was like her altar boy, her servant, pastor's assistant, whatever you want to call it, when I was in grade school. And so I was just very bonded and close to her. So since she led the church, I was there for her. When she died, there was no reason for me to stay. And so then I learned how to go through like the original languages of the Bible through different concordances and different texts and different things like that. And I learned how to interpret everything for myself. And I asked the Lord to just wipe my mind clean of whatever it is that I thought I knew about him, whatever it is I've ever heard anybody tell me about him. And I wanted to just start over brand new from ground zero, because I knew that the voices in my head and the things that I thought were corrupt because they were coming from people with agendas.
Okay.
And so I started over. And I just gave myself permission to do that. And so what I have now is a very personal relationship with God that is independent of churches. You know, it approaches the Bible, you know, from my own interpretation of it, not anybody else's.
Yeah. We were talking a bit before, like, what event ended the cycle and brought you, or was there an event, sorry, like that ends that cycle of drugs and jail and anger?
Oh, okay. Transferred my probation from the state of Texas to the state of Louisiana so I could come back home. That brought me back into close connection with my evangelist, Nelson. And it wasn't like, it was just the mercy of God that I didn't get arrested again, because it's not like I didn't keep doing the drugs and all of that, because it's very difficult to stop somebody from doing drugs, and because, you know, the community, like what you mentioned earlier, is there. So when you're asking somebody to stop being homeless, to stop being a drug dealer, to stop doing drugs, you're asking them to give up their community. It's like asking anybody to leave your church, leave your job. You know, whether or not you think it's a good life or not, it doesn't matter. You know, there's love out there on those streets enough. And so it wasn't easy. You know, I had an apartment and everything like that, but I would still leave it and go walk down the street to talk to homeless people because I related with them better. And it took years for my mind to be reconditioned and for me to believe that I was a part of whatever the fuck normal society is supposed to be. But I was on probation for like 5-6 years, you know, and so it took years. And it was just, my evangelist was praying for me and interceding and keeping me spiritually, you know, from keeping me through her spiritual intervention from going back to jail. But I did bad shit. It was just like a gradual thing. So I did less drugs over the years, kind of like a harm reduction thing, although I didn't know that that's what it was called.
Yeah.
And then eventually I got to a point where I was like, okay, I'm ready to like stop. I took a trip to Miami, did way too much ecstasy, and ended up with like the flu for like a month. And I was like, okay, I didn't even inject anything and I'm this sick. So maybe it's time to stop. So that was the most cataclysmic thing. After that, I got like a sponsor in the Crystal Meth Anonymous program. So that was when I really started to try and wrestle with it. The hypnotherapy is what keeps me off of drugs, though. I see a hypnotherapist once a month for that.
I just wonder, like, that balance between hypnotherapy, self-hypnosis, meditation, prayer, all of those kinds of things. I don't think there's answers necessarily to all that. It's just interesting, yeah. So, I mean, now you're drug-free and in a long-term relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you just got back from Pride in New Orleans on Saturday night. How was that?
No, it was intoxicating. You know, I'm not like the type of drug-free person that doesn't drink alcohol. I'm like, no, mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to have my wines. So it was a turn up and it's always nice. I don't know if you've ever been to New Orleans, but just the spirit of that city in and of itself is very liberating. Like you can be in the worst mood ever. And as soon as your foot steps foot on Bourbon Street, breweries like just leave.
That's very cool. What kind of changes, I mean, if anything, did you see?
Bourbon Street is filthy. But, you know, in the best way. So in the French Quarter, which is where Bourbon Street is terribly dirty. Like every morning, the street sweepers, these big machines have to come through there and clean it all out. So you're going to have like just beer and all kinds of piss and vomit and beads everywhere. It sounds terrible, but we keep going back for it anyway. And so
like we used to have the same with Mardi Gras. I mean, it's become so commercialized, but you know, our Mardi Gras started, Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras started after the Stonewall protests, and it started as like this protest march, 78. So, anyway.
There's always this combination of like protest and celebration. And like, I feel like we've maybe lost that a little bit. Like lately, like we can protest a lot. We love to protest, but it can be hard for people to get back into that celebration side as well. I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
What was it like in the UK in the last month? I mean, anything exciting?
I mean, there's loads of Pride marches, but again, a lot of Pride in the UK has become very commercialized. So a lot of the more independent ones, like there's like Fat Pride and there's like Black Pride, and like there's sort of side prides to like the kind of like the more LGBT Pride.
Wow, all right.
They tend to be more like freeing spaces and they tend to have like a lot more celebration at them and be a lot safer places for people. And they're not just, you know, like sometimes the UK Pride can just be like, oh, we've got Ariana Grande on stage. And it's just like, okay, so... That's, you know, that's not really a celebration of our world, really. I wouldn't want to criticize them. Like, you know, people love Pride in the UK as well. Like, and it's just good to see people, you know, that high visibility. Like, you know, we have that high visibility of our lives. And that's great for the next generation to just see, because they don't even need to worry about that stuff now.
Yeah. I think the protest and the pride and the celebration used to be all one big thing. So people were arrested in Sydney at the first, you know, protest, and then it became like a march and it was all very stompy up the street. Really, really changed.
What I do love that I see, I'm seeing a lot of like straight, like heterosexual, say like bars and restaurants now mm-hmm. do like drag shows and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's happening all over the world, but I appreciate the way the straight community is standing in solidarity with us in the ways that they can. Mm-hmm. What these straight establishments are saying to their patrons is like, we're embracing the 2S LGBTQIA community and we hope you will too. If you won't, well, then you can get out.
Mm-hmm. Dee, what's 2S? You just threw a 2S in front, and most of us haven't heard the 2S. Can you give us a quick?
2S has to do with two, it means two spirit. This is getting into like the indigenous side of things. And as I understand it, if you are not like an indigenous, you know, born person, then you cannot be 2S, but it has to do, as far as I understand it, with kind of like, you know, if somebody doesn't feel like they're just like one thing, you know.
Okay.
And I did an interview with a girl from like the Edmonton Two Spirit Society, which is in Canada. And then she really gave a good breakdown of what 2S means in this whole, like the whole indigenous history and the colonization and the crazy shit white people have done.
and I mean, that's on a pod we could find of yours.
Yeah, I did a show with her already.
Okay, cool. I'll chuck that in the link. We've talked about this before, but you know, Draps and I couldn't be any whiter if we tried. We are people without any color. As a black man, tell us what the hell I've, you know, what the hell I've missed, we've missed. What do you see? We were talking about privilege, and look, I mean, Dee, we talked about this at the start of the month. I was asking you to have a listen to the pods and see what you think. You know, it's definitely been here at Leaving Hillsong, as all of us are very, very white and see that through that particular lens and just don't have the insight to what, you know, goes on for LGBT people in that are in the Black community, or how that intersects. And I mean, as Sarah was saying, there is a certain privilege to men coming out, or at least speaking out, because the church listens to and has men speak for it as the general rule. And I'm just wondering, you know, at the end of kind of Pride Month here, like, as a Black gay man, what do you see? What am I missing? What messages do we need to hear from the community, but also from the Christian community? I mean,
Sarah has a point with that, and what she was talking about are the longstanding traditions and history, you know, of the Middle East. You know, culturally speaking, women are not on equal footing, you know, with men. And I'm not saying that that's a good thing or a bad thing. That's just how the fuck they are. That's just what they're, how they are. And what she's saying is that's been ingrained into the church. Well, yeah, they do. You know, they, you know, women are not like treated equally in churches either, because they're trying to pattern themselves after Middle Eastern customs. So in terms of whether or not, you know, the, you know, Black people, you know, or like gay people and Black people are being heard and things like that, I really think it depends on exactly what church you are at, you know, because every church is really, really different.
Yeah.
You would think that because all of these churches are reading from the same Bible, that there would be some common thread, but churches are divided. They all believe mm-hmm. differently. Look at how many different interpretations of the Bible we have thing. Look at how many different denominations, even within Christianity, look at how many different divisions you have. So if we're to say we're all supposed to be following the same God, we can totally not get on the same page about how to do that. So if you're a woman, I would maybe go find a church that's run by a woman, you know.
Oh, more taboo. Okay.
Probably would be in a better position. If you, whatever you feel like you're not getting at church, then just, if you feel like you want to be a part of a church, then go fucking find it somewhere else. Never, ever, ever go to a church that doesn't celebrate non-straight people if you're not straight. And then our straight allies, I don't think you can really be our ally if you support churches that are against us.
Yeah. Mm. I just wonder where that line is between seeker sensitive and scratching itchy ears or whatever that verse was and stuff. But I'm no theologian.
Well, it depends on what the itching ears are. You know, some people hold to the belief, and I think it was Barry Bowen who was saying this, you know, preachers tell people what they want to hear. You know, he's talking about the fluffy, flowery messages.
Yep.
That are really very deep. What you're talking about is people having itching ears going where they're just going to hear what's going to make them comfortable, and they're not going to be challenged. And so what I'm saying is going somewhere where you're not going to feel like you're being criticized and judged for being who you are. If you're not straight, then don't go to a church where they think anything less of you at all. But having said that, you're not, so one experience is not going to be the same at each church. And what I don't want people to do is to generalize it. I don't see how that is a good mindset to get into, because as terrible as Lakewood Church was to me, that doesn't mean that every non-denominational church out there is like that.
Always reminded of what women experience in churches being so different to the male experience. And
this is why I'm a big proponent of people studying history.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey.
If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
For themselves. You shouldn't be going to a church relying on the guy on stage to know more than you. He doesn't. You can read the same shit he can. You, like I said earlier, the Bible is from the Middle East. You have cultures in there that are Middle Eastern. They're not American. They're not Australian. Yeah. So if you're a woman and you're going to a church and you're seeing women have to sit here or be marginalized that are not allowed, you really can't be surprised when you think about it because that is the culture that you're stepping into. You know, you are. A lot of the people act like the Bible came from their own country or whatever. It didn't. And, you know, you are part of Middle Eastern traditions, you know, when you go to a church. And that's how they treat women over there.
You know, the Middle Eastern traditions are updating in the same way that Christian traditions are updating, you know. And, you know, you see different, you know, inclusions of women in different Muslim societies and so on now to what you would have done before. And sometimes I think the Christian churches still go back to, like, you know, the ancient times and think that's how things should be because that's how they were. Whereas I think, you know, all of society and all of these traditions are always changing and always updating and always like finding new ways to be more inclusive and to kind of draw everybody in to celebrate, you know, to celebrate what makes us human and also what connects us with each other and what connects us with God in the instance of, you know, church and religion.
And they do so selectively, Matt, like, you know, they totally cherry pick, you know, which is what Sarah was saying. I totally agree with her on that. They totally cherry pick what works for them and what doesn't. It is literally impossible to act like we're all in the Middle East 2000 years ago. We wouldn't be we couldn't go anywhere if you're going to follow all the rules. So if you're not going to do every damn thing that was done back then you don't agree of picking the few things that you want to do. And by that logic, there should be no women preachers or co-pastors or nothing like that, because women didn't speak, you know, back then. There's no, you know, there are no women apostles or nothing like that. You know, if I applied the church's logic, so, you know, the way that I was hearing Joel Osteen say in an interview, he was like, there's no examples of gay marriage, so I won't marry people. Well, there's also no examples of women running churches, you know, so it's just they just do whatever the fuck they want to do.
Yeah, they definitely do. I mean, if I had a dollar for every time a church that does not welcome gay people encourages people to go work on Sundays or runs a coffee shop or runs the store on Sundays, honestly, I can't even. I'd be a millionaire.
You've kind of removed the church's narrative from your own Christianity. Am I heading in the right direction, Dee?
The perfect way to say it.
Beautiful. All right. And how do people kind of do that for themselves? I mean, how do you know what's what? I mean, it was just interesting listening to you talk about choosing churches, like almost like it's a food court, like it's so difficult for people to up and move and relate and trust and start again and invest. Or there's a lot there, but it's a terrific attitude. People have to invest in a place where they feel it's absolutely right, not because for any other reason or they get told or... Yeah, how do people kind of have that individuality for themselves? How do you kind of nurture that?
It's a good thing that knowledge is now at our fingertips. You know, I grew up in a time where you couldn't just Google, you know, different perspectives on scriptures. You had to have like a thick concordance book, which I have, and only the pastors had those then. Mm-hmm. So if you find out the way something was said in Greek or in Hebrew or Aramaic, you had to wait for the guy on stage to tell you, or you can ask Siri. You know, now if you really want to know. So how does someone become an independent Christian apart from the church? Mm-hmm. The first thing to do is to evaluate yourself and find out why you feel like you need church in the first place. So it's like you were raised that way. Someone else told you that, probably. And then what do you fear would happen if you would leave? Do you think you're going to burn up and go to hell? Do you think, you know, I'm getting back to motives now. Why are you doing what you're doing in the first place? Okay. And so who is God to you? Are you really going to church for God? Or are you going for the baked apple pie on Sundays? You know, we got to get the motive. So if you decide you want to get on that path, then you start alone. Your private time with God should be the most important time with you anyway. Okay. And then these churches make it seem like we're going to do this worship and I feel so close to God during worship. You should feel closer to him when you're by yourself, you know, because when the Lord appears to people, usually for me personally, and then when you read the Hebrew text, they're not usually in the middle of a congregation. You know, a lot of times they're out in fields and shit, you know, and by themselves.
Yeah. It's always a Tuesday afternoon when you least expect it, as I say. But I mean, I'm just wondering, because we relied for so long on these institutions to kind of decide who and what and where God was. Stepping away from that, how do you know how to decide? I mean, hypnosis, meditation, the voice of God, how do people, I mean, I know it's so incredibly personal and subjective. It's just such an interesting take.
And I think that it's beautiful because it is so personal and subjective, because not everybody, no two people are going to have the exact same relationship.
Yeah, of course.
And so I love that about it, which is, I'm actually going to write like kind of like a one page outline free course thing that I'm going to put on my website. It's going to be like, okay, if you're considering an alone walk with God, here are these scriptures to start with. So we're going to do some praying, maybe some fasting, maybe some meditation. Here's where this comes from historically. Here's how it applies today. But even with that, and I'm not going to go further than a page on it, because I don't want people to feel like that they're relying on me to tell them. I'm trying to guide you onto your personal path with God, so that you know, okay. So for me, every morning that I wake up, I either pray or read a scripture or something like that. I might fast a few days a week if I'm trying to do a specific thing. If I get confused about a text, then I'll go look up what it means in Hebrew or Greek or Aramaic or something like that and study it. It's like dating God, whatever it is that you do. If you want to sing him a song in private, you know, read a book on spirituality, you know, whatever the case may be, this is how you begin to get to know God. At some point, he's going to come and meet you because you're reaching for him. So he's going to reach back, and then he's going to reveal himself to you in a way that you know it's you. You know, it's a two-way thing here. You know, we're reaching for him, but he's going to reach for us. And then the relationship is going to evolve into whatever it is that God wants it to be with each individual person. And that is something that I cannot tell you what it's going to be.
Yeah, it's quite a postmodern perspective as well. It's like everyone's, of course, going to have their own. Everyone's going to have their own bias. And your story is quite a story of hope, isn't it? I mean, redemption and kind of hanging on in there for a better tomorrow, really, isn't it? I mean, you've overcome so much.
I think so. I'm very glad that I got kicked out of church, because it's the best thing that ever happened to me. I had made a God out of church, out of going to church and out of preachers and worship leaders, and I didn't realize that I had. I wasn't spiritually mature just because I was doing all that volunteering and stuff. I wasn't, because if I was spiritually mature when they kicked me out, I wouldn't have let that put a division between me and God.
Kind of kept you at that milk level, yeah?
Because see, when you're in churches, they're going to keep you at a certain level under your foot. They're not really trying to grow you, because church is like a school, and like any school, you should graduate at some point. You shouldn't be going back to them. But if they do that, then they're not going to have their cash flow and their agenda is going to be all fucked up. And so those churches are not interested in growing you. So I started writing music intensely when I was a part of the worship experience at Lakewood. And so God gives me music in my dreams, and then I write them out. And so I went to the choir pastor when I had that first song, that first full song come to me, because I didn't know the music industry is a whole other beast to try to navigate. So I'm like, what do I do with this? I wasn't asking him to put me on the next Lakewood album or anything like that. I just needed some direction. Okay, this is where you can go to get it copywritten. This is how you get sheet music, you know, something. You know, he never really replied to me. He wouldn't get back to me. So it's okay to sing behind Cindy Cruz, Ratcliffe, or Darlene Check, whoever they have on stage. You know, we can do that. We can support you. But if one of the little lowly choir members comes with a song, then you can't do anything with that. You don't want to hear any of this. Okay. You know,
what happened to the song? What happened to your music?
I called my evangelist Nelson to ask her, and she just said, just to hold them. Because the thing about God, if he's going to give you something, that's one thing. Then when he's ready, he will tell you what to do with it. See, we have a tendency to go running off wanting to do too much too quick, and that's how I can be. And so she just basically told me to chill, calm, calm down, and, you know, and wait. And so I've just been recording the songs for years. I have all kinds of music just saved up for when that day comes. But my point is that those churches get out there and they're like, we're here to support you. We want everyone to grow, as long as you're not going to fuck up their agenda.
Yeah.
that's such a good point, because then as each of us do go out into the world for one reason or another, and if it's sudden, the coping skills are just not there. The life skills are just not there. I'm used to being told what to do. And
I get it. So it's like being in the military, how I was, and having everything so orchestrated. Yeah. Getting out, it's a hard transition, but it's a necessary transition. You know, nobody's saying it's going to be easy. The question to ask yourself is, why are you so damn dependent on the church? They've got you. You know, if it's that hard for you to follow God for yourself, I mean, that's not a position you want to be in. They have you entrapped. Like, literally, you don't feel free to follow God without them. Mm. That's insane.
I mean, yeah, spiritual entrapment, right?
That's a fucking prison. Like, yeah. They don't want to let you go.
You know, we've talked before about leaving strategies, and I was so interested how Sarah said she found stuff out. She said, I didn't like it, so I was out of there. And yet other people, you know, go through lengthy processes, and it's so different. And looking at that kind of addiction side, it sheds a lot of light. Hey,
it's not easy, but if it were me, I would. So you're switching communities. So like in hypnotherapy, you always want to replace something, you know, so if you're going to take one thing away, add something to it. So, but you have to, in order to do that, you have to be clear on what you were getting out of the church experience in the first place. Because not everybody is going there for the same reasons. You know, like I said, are you going for Barbara's baked apple pie on Sundays? Are you going for the music? Are you going for, you know, why? Okay. So once you know that, and a lot of people don't even know that, they're just so like, oh my God, it's cool, I just want to go. You have to know what you're getting out of it before you can know how to find it somewhere else or create it somewhere else. So I was getting a godly instruction. So I like the learning aspect of it. I can write my own music. I don't need them for the worship. So what I had to do was learn how to get instructed by myself. And so once I found how to do that through books, through the internet, then I no longer needed the church.
Aha, this ties in with what you were saying to me about everyone can be their own pastor.
Yeah. And that's why I don't want a congregation, and I don't want that, because I don't want people to become dependent on me. Mm-hmm. And I'm writing a book called Don't Call Me a Christian, and it's going to talk about, you know, all the, you know, ways to be independent and how to follow God by yourself, and why we don't really just need the church and stuff like that, because it is complex. So my way of helping people do it is like my blogs and my writings and my shows. You know, I'm trying to teach people through this and show them how to be independent followers of the Lord. I don't like to call myself a Christian because the word is just too like evil these days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Follow Christ. Very loaded.
And there are people who want to fight for the term Christian, but from the beginning we never needed that. Jesus wasn't even a Christian.
Right. And I watch these Hillsong pastors, and it really is all about this word church. It's, you know, building the church, praying for the church, elevating the church so the church can do God's work. But it seems to be that's all secondary to church, church, church. And it's very deliberate language, and can say a lot more why now.
That's one of the things I don't like about these pre-written sermons that a lot of churches do. Like the preachers who raised me, they never did that. They just simply got up, read a few scriptures, and then preached for 3 hours. Yeah. These people can't even preach for 20, 30 minutes without it being like written in advance and reviewed. So what that does is create an opportunity for them to put in keywords that they know are going to hypnotize people and stuff like that. You know, you can tailor the word language exactly how you want it to be to mind fuck people when you have that much time to practice it and rehearse it.
I mean, again, you seek some kind of level of deliberate, you know, they're doing deliberate hypnotic things to people.
And I'm just cognizant of the subconscious influence of everything. You know, say like in marketing, repeat marketing, they show you the same person back to back. It may seem like a waste. Okay, you just saw the commercial, but if they keep hitting you with that same commercial, it's going to make an imprint on you whether you wanted to or not, because everything that we come across in life influences us in some type of way. And so in a conversation, if you raise your voice tone, certain pitches and stuff like that, it has a different effect on somebody. And so if I say, hey, that's different if I say, hey, versus hey, you know,
yeah,
but if somebody manipulate that right, you can totally, you know, get the best of somebody, and they won't even realize you're doing it.
We all know the how to influence people, hey, in different ways to persuade them to do what we want. I guess we just don't all do it from the, you know, claiming the direction of God, and that's the big difference.
Nobody can claim God. I think Vladimir Putin even said this war he's raging against Ukraine is in the name of God. Uh-huh. Anybody can run out and say what they want, but these churches have their own agenda. Like you're saying, like, it's really all about the church and the family that runs the church. The last time that I was at Lakewood, I went there, you know, filming a part of my docuseries. That's the only reason I went there, not for any reason, but to snoop and get just to get the, you know. And so I walk in there and they have pictures of like the Osteen family, Joel, Victoria, and their two children plastered all over the walls on the inside. And I was like, okay, so they're basically reminding everyone of whose house this really is. You could have put pictures of, I don't know, God, a cross, you know, the people, the congregation, you know, you, but you want to put pictures of people who are already on TV all the damn time. Yeah. Anyway, I'm like, now they're going to stand up there and be like, oh, this is the Lakewood legacy and we love you because you made it that. But I'm all like, no, what I see is the reinforcement of, you know, this is how a crime boss would do shit. I want you to know who's in charge here and it's us and it's not you.
1,000%. 1,000%.
I feel like that comes up a lot in the Leaving Hillsong podcasts. Oh, crime families and all of the money and all of the power. It just seems to be a recurring theme.
Funny that.
You know, the thing about Pride Month and thing about the sort of the LGBTQI story is that you have to find those things that give you joy in life and mm-hmm. go after them and know that that is, you know, is who you are and what you are, and you know, and that's true whether you're inside that community or not inside that community. You can find the things in your life that are so important to you and make you who you are, you know. That's what I take from Pride Month.
Beautiful.
I appreciate Pride Month for what it is. I love the way that health and stuff is really brought up a lot during Pride Month. But I really wish that people would be this prideful and this health conscious all the time.
Yeah.
You know, year round. And it's, and for as intense as the battles are that are waging against us, I hope that people can take the spirit of pride with them forever.
And I feel like inside the kind of the gay community, it's really important to look out for, you know, the other people within the rainbow umbrella who maybe aren't, you know, always at the forefront of people's minds and so on. And even in, you know, the gay community, how many times have I heard gay men making jokes about lesbians and so on? Like, even on that level, like, there's things we can do to just elevate and lift up the people who are, you know, who are around us, and, you know, and we have to support one another, and us and supporting women with everything going on in America. Like, it's the only way we're going to get forward is if we all like link arms and just try and keep moving towards the world that we want it to look like, not just like the world that just like a small branch of extremist Christians want the world to look like.
Yeah, that's a beautiful, like, is that what the spirit of pride is? I mean, because we're cautioned, of course, against pride in Christianity. So what's the spirit of pride mean for you?
Upset, chaos, destruction, rebellion. These are things I mean in a positive way because I like me a good shakeup.
Okay.
Pride is us fighting back, is us not letting ourselves be relegated to what other people want us to do. And the Christian church is used to controlling people, controlling the narrative, controlling everything. But the whole point of my whole ministry is to remind people that, again, everyone has an opinion and the church's opinion is just an opinion. It doesn't actually mean anything. And the church wouldn't have any power without the people, the congregants, giving them their power. No kingdom is anything without subjects. And so they have their subjects, but you don't have to be a part of that. It's unfortunate that religion and politics are like one now, and the church is not saying anything that ever seems that strategically advantageous for them to have political backing. But pride is us to clap back at that and to still tell pastors and politicians to go and fuck themselves.
And that's a beautiful note to end on. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Draps, thank you so much for June. I appreciate it. We're all going to talk together soon, yeah, in various ways. So. Dee, thanks so much for your evening and your perspective. Boom, wow, yeah, thunderstorm. We'll talk soon, yeah?
Okay, all right. Talk soon. Love you all. Bye-bye.
Good night, good night.
Thank you so very much.
No, thank you. Thank you. Well, thank you for sticking around and being a part of that really interesting conversation between three very different people who have had three very similar experiences in lots of ways. And isn't that what pride is all about? Something heartwarming like that. So thank you so much for your support and for tuning in and being a part of this community. You are so, so appreciated. Don't forget to like and subscribe and share. And if you're having any problems accessing this pod since the big old move of platforms, please let me know. We'll see what we can do. Everything should be running smoothly, but, you know, just lots more content coming up as soon as I can figure out all the technicalities. Won't be long, though, and I'm really excited about that because there's some really special stuff coming up. No, I won't hint just yet. We'll hang around and see. If you feel like supporting us here, us, I mean me and the cats, drop on by the Patreon, please, or the PayPal for Leaving Hillsong. You can support us there. Do send in your questions, your feedback, your messages, your reactions. It's also so important to contribute to what's going on here. You can find Vannon at the Sex, Drugs and Jesus podcast and website. He's got a docu-series. He's got all kind of content and merchandise and, like, just, it's a beautiful website. Go check him out. He's a great, great supporter of this show, and I'd love for you to drop by and say hi to him there at his. Thanks for your time, your support, your likes, your subscribes. Stay tuned on social media. Keep up to date. Keep on being kind to yourself. Keep on being kind to people just in spite of them. And keep leaving Hillsong. We'll talk soon. Bye.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.